Are you ready to clear a new path? Are you ready to get vulnerable and lead with truth? Welcome to Clearing a New Path podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Ray. Clearing a New Path podcast is an invitation to listen and learn along with me on the road to building a more united, feminist, anti-oppressive rural Canada, one that genuinely embraces authenticity and is rooted in reconciliation. Each episode will examine issues and look for collective solutions, all outside of the city limits. Let's learn together, clearing a new path. I first met Janon McNaughton during the pandemic, and we have remained good friends ever since, supporting one another in our personal and professional pursuits. We both live in the same county. I always learn something valuable from her, and this conversation is no different. Janon, her husband and brother-in-law, took control of the family farm and launched Proofline Farm Creamery and Farm Market late last year. But the planning has been years in the making. She shares that story now. Welcome to another episode. I am thrilled to have with me today Janon McNaughton from Proofline Farm Creamery and Farm Market in Ilderton, Ontario. Welcome.
Hi.
It's so good to see you. One of the things that I know about you, Janon, is that you have a PhD in social work. And the first question I'm going to ask is, how did you go from a career, perhaps, in social work to owning, running, managing this incredible endeavor in Ilderton, Ontario?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It wasn't planned, I'll say that much. When I was getting close to the end of doing my PhD, I knew that I didn't want to have a traditional academic career. And so I was starting my own freelance writing business at that time, which I thought at the time was just going to be, you know, sort of a temporary thing while I kind of figured out what I was doing. But I ended up doing that for over 5 years before ending up here out at the farm. It ended up being because, you know, my husband's family has a farm, a dairy farm here. We're just about 5-10 minutes north of London, Ontario. And even though I met my husband in the city right after I finished my PhD, we were both working in the city. You know, it was kind of one of those things where we both had this interest in food, me coming at it more from a food security, community lens, you know, community development type lens, and him coming at it from food production and working in different food production facilities. And we left our jobs actually in 2019. We both needed a change from what we were doing. We traveled all around Asia, and then we ended up in Australia to work, where he ended up getting a job at a small dairy down there. And I was still working freelance throughout that time. And we toured a ton of different dairies in Australia, where on-farm creameries that where, you know, the farmers are actually selling their dairy products direct to consumer was a lot more common in Australia. And from that experience, we kind of decided at that time, you know, this is something we could do. We both wanted to have that sort of entrepreneurial spirit. And then what happened, well, like COVID happened. We were still in Australia. We were still in Melbourne in February 2020. And we came back early from being in Australia because, you know, COVID was shutting the world down. And we saw firsthand supply chains totally breaking down. First in Australia when we were there with just like empty shelves in Melbourne. And then when we got back to Canada, the same thing. You just saw, even though we're surrounded by some of the best agricultural land in the world here in southwestern Ontario, the supply chains could not get the food into the households, you know? And that just didn't make sense to me. And it kind of was the final piece of the puzzle where we moved from even just wanting and having this dream of having the creamery and being involved in small food production into it being an actual need for the community as well, because there's no reason living where we live in the country and in the world where we have amazing agriculture all around us, there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to provide food for our own community. And really, it's up to people who are producing food, such as farmers in rural areas, to be part of that movement. And so it kind of, my background in social work, which has always been a more community development, policy, research area of social work, I mean, it fits exactly in with this desire that I've had to be my own boss, as well as, you know, do something that's having a positive impact on the community, combined with like my husband's interest in small scale food production.
Okay. What's important to you now that you've begun? What are you finding are the things that you really didn't think about, really hadn't considered before you started? You talked about food security and knowing that something really needed to be done about that. Now you're in business and you're working with all kinds of different vendors, all different kinds of farmers. What is still missing?
Oof, yeah, it has been very challenging navigating the food system, navigating government regulations from multiple levels of government. You know, and there's always been this sort of driving force of, because I'm from the city, because my husband's grew up in the country on the farm, and, you know, wanting to connect urban folks with rural agriculture. And people talk a lot about, you know, the disconnect that urban folks feel around the food system. But it has been really, it has been challenging to see the barriers that farmers face in getting their food into the local food system, I think has been really eye-opening for me. There's not a lot of support, I would say. Sometimes it's just easier and more stable, you know, when we're talking about farmers are families, you know, who also have a very volatile industry, right? Crop prices go up and down, and there's, on a global level, that when you're talking about actual households in a rural community, I can see now more why people would go for some of these larger contracts, or you know, not taking their food every Saturday to a farmer's market when they don't know how much they're going to sell, right? Like, there's just, it's a very different lifestyle, farming, compared to what I grew up, you know, in the city, what I thought my career is like in a 9-to-5 environment was going to be like, you know, like that doesn't exist out here. So, I mean, that's a huge mental shift, especially because we have animals, you know, you work every day, and it's not always clear, you know, even how much your work is going to pay off, right? There's so many things like weather and climate change right now really impacting. We saw this winter, there was hardly a winter this year, you know, and winter is really important to the crops and the soil. So adapting, you're just constantly adapting to things. And then on top of that, I think because the food system has moved towards this larger scale industrial food system that we're used to, with like supply chains that you know, incentivize just sort of selling to a grocery store, or you know, not really working direct with the buyer, like the customers. When you want to do that, it's not always easy to find resources and supports and information on how to do it. So we ran into that a lot, where if we had questions, you know, because we're in the dairy industry, which is has its own regulations as well, but there weren't a lot of people who even really could answer our questions. We ended up having to do a lot of research ourselves on top of, you know, on top of your job that you're doing, just literally farming, you know, research. Luckily, I have good research skills. So, you know, but my husband read the entire Dairy Act. We tried to find somebody who could design a small on-farm creamery, which we couldn't find anybody, because a lot of the experts, you know, design larger buildings. So he ended up designing the building himself, which is not in his, you know, he's never designed a building. And it's an extremely technical build, because of the food safety requirements. And, you know, none of this is, we're not against any of these things. If you don't do it yourself, there's really nowhere to go to get it done. You know, even if you were paying somebody, there's no one to pay. So, you know, the facility is a custom facility designed by my husband, based on his experience working in food processing and in several other little plants. And luckily he did have that experience in Australia, but again, their regulations are very different. So it just, it has really opened my eyes to really what many entrepreneurs go through, but also the additional sort of layers of food safety, food processing, and then the actual supply chain. Again, with dairy, like, I mean, it has to be temperature controlled from beginning to end. So it's not like produce, where even if you grow something, then you can just drive it out to the farmer's market. Like, we have to be monitoring temperatures at all stages. It requires refrigerated trucking and stuff like that. So it's just like layers of cost. The learning curve is very expensive. You know, there were mistakes we made. There were mistakes other people made that we had to pay for, because it was the first time many, many people were doing something like that. And still, we're on a trial basis for some of our processes that we've set up, because they're just not being done anywhere else.
I think that there's a big difference between building a factory, for instance, somebody starting a new venture in a bigger city and applying for permits from a bigger municipality, compared to perhaps a smaller municipality, a rural one that has many smaller communities in it. Is that the case? Have you found a difference in kind of chasing the requirements that you need, and the papers that you need, and the certifications and all of those things?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of that I didn't even know when we started out. So because our farm, our farm is located on a provincially managed highway, out here in the county. And so because of that, we initially had to start our permitting and looking into things with the province through the Ministry of Transportation to talk about a road access point to a store. And we do have a road access point for farm equipment on our property that we wanted to use, which they called an intensification of an existing access. And, you know, because, so where we're located, in London's rapidly growing lot of housing going up around us. And because of our proximity to the city, what we didn't know until we had gone down that road, literally, but until we had, you know, asked them about it. So they were not allowing, there's no intensification allowed in the stretch that our farm's located on. So that initial application, that was back in October 2022, that was October 2021, actually, was denied, like, flat out. Just, you know, nothing personal. We're not allowing anything anymore on that road. So we then pivoted the location up onto the north side of our property, which is a county road. Went to the county to talk about that. But because the access point that we were suggesting is within 150 meters of the intersection with the provincial road, the province still had to sign off on it. Before then, the county signed. So it's just these, like, I mean, this is just one example, right? And then the municipality was involved with the actual zoning and other things related. So these are the things, like an example of something that you really just can't know ahead of time. Like, you can try to do your research on it, but a lot of times you won't get a firm answer until you're actually going to apply. So you have to go through that process of application to actually get to know whether it's a yes or a no. So it just eats up your time, you know, and then you have multiple levels of government that, you know, it's like, who's going to sign off first, right? So and we don't know, right? Like, because we are, you know, this is not our area of expertise in terms of permitting and zoning and all this stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of back and forth because we live in an area that has a county and a municipality government. So yeah, you have to know the system. And like, I've worked in provincial government before. So again, like, this is where stuff that was so in my social work life, at least I knew how to navigate the system to some degree. You know, like, the average person out here is not going to have that, you know, years of experience in government, kind of knowing who to start with even. So yeah, that was sort of the starting point of, like, even just getting permits and things approved and seeing really, like, the disconnects between different levels of expectation, different government expectations, and who needs to sign off on what and whatnot.
You handpick your vendors, the folks that you work with or that you have their products in your store. You very, I don't want to say strategically, but you very intentionally chose the people that you did for the reasons that you hold dear to you. What are those? What were some of the must-haves that when you were looking for vendors to fill out your store, what were some of the things that were requirements for them to work with you, for you to work together?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for me, local is great, but it has never been enough. It doesn't mean that something is enough, I should say. We do look for partners that have similar values to us, or that even have something about their values, you know, on their website or on their products, or, you know, anywhere where they're kind of showing some intentionality about what it is they're about. Because we think very hard and long, and we have had, you know, it's a family business, right? So we don't always agree on everything. But at the beginning of this, when we were doing the business plan, you know, we really had a lot of conversations about what are our core values as people on a team, where we can all align from our different areas. You know, I run the store. My husband does the food processing. My brother-in-law and my father-in-law do, you know, the on-farm work. but there's a shared set of values around the things that we care about. And we care about sustainability and constantly working to improve the health of the farm, you know, all aspects of that, including the animals and the soil and, you know, the practices that we are doing. We've done a lot in that area. But then that also extends to products where, you know, if I can find a supplier, if I can find a local vendor who also shares that, that's great. You know, the reality is, you know, small businesses, it's hard, you know, it is hard to always absorb the cost because like a lot of us, because we're small, we don't qualify for, you know, the same bulk buy discounts. Like our packaging per item is quite expensive for our compostable gelato containers. You know, that's one way that we've tried to really put our values to work in the store by having like zero waste packaging of the gelato that we can compost everything here on the farm. But the cost of the packaging is quite high for us because we buy small quantities. And so it's the same thing of like when I'm looking for partners, I'm looking at ways that it's like realistic and I can see that an effort has been made. You know, I don't expect everybody to be able to do everything, especially small businesses, because we can't either. You know, it takes time to really implement those things. But just to even show that people are thinking about things like supplier diversity, you know, we try to have different people from different backgrounds, people from different cultures, especially when you're talking about food, you know, different. We have a lot of products that are very interesting that might not be thought of to be, you know, sort of traditional farm foods, but they show up in our community and local people are making them. You know, we try to have young entrepreneurs who are just starting out, you know, we try to get a good mix of things. And then really, you know, if I can't find anybody who is doing something that my customers are looking for, then I have to go further afield for that, you know, but I'm always on the lookout for people who can bring those shared values with them into the store that we're all on the same page with. And that also goes the other way where, you know, not everyone's going to be in my store. Just because something's local, you know, like I said, that isn't always enough. It needs to be a little bit more than that. It needs to, you know, show commitment, I think, to this bigger issue that like we all care about is of like community food security, sustainability within the food system. There has to be something about that, I think, with the brands that we work with.
I think it's really admirable. I see you do it and I know how intentional you are. And I think that people really appreciate it. You share that on social media. You are very much about promoting all of them. And I think that people appreciate that. And it is modeling, actually modeling what you want to live. And I think a lot of people admire you for that. You came in, you and your husband, I mean, it was his family's farm, multi-generational. How did you navigate those relationships when you and your husband were looking to do this, to open this farm creamery and farm market store? You know, how did you sell it to them? How did you say, you know, okay, this is ours, you know, and how did you navigate that? Because I'm sure there's lots of people, younger folks like yourselves, who would love to take over and do some innovative things. How did you navigate that?
Yeah, I think that I didn't even realize in the beginning how important the relationships, family relationships were going to be to this actually being successful. You know, because when, you know, I met my husband, this wasn't our plan to do this necessarily. So it's not something that, you know, we've always been working towards this goal. We were already married when we kind of started talking about this. And so I've been lucky. We've been really lucky because my father-in-law and also his mother, so she is still, you know, she comes to the store a lot too to help me. They have allowed us to just, they see why we're doing it. They understand it, you know, and they've helped guide us as well. And a lot of other family members too that are around here. So it's been a group effort. But I didn't actually realize how rare it was for, you know, that generation to really fully hand the reins over in agriculture. We wouldn't have been able to do this. I wouldn't have been able to do what I'm doing in the store. I don't know that I'd be involved if I couldn't have done it my way. Because it's so important to me to be values driven. And if we were not all on the same page, like, I think I would have recognized, you know, I wasn't just going to run a store just to sell things. You know, that wouldn't have been what I saw my life's purpose as. You know, my purpose in this, yes, I run the store, but it's all the other stuff around it, right? Like supporting all the other entrepreneurs to help them get, you know, we're in a great location. So I try to leverage that to bring new brands to people, to help other people build their business, you know, reinvesting money back into farm practices that are helping this be more sustainable. You know, we all have to be on the same page about that. The zero waste packaging, you know, plastic would have been a lot cheaper, but we decided that was a cost worth, you know, keeping on the ledger kind of thing, you know? So everybody, especially me, my husband, and my brother-in-law, who are the ones, you know, really making decisions right now. If we hadn't have been all on the same page and kind of seeing where this needs to go, I don't think the store would be here. You know, it just, that is critical. It is so critical to making sure everybody feels heard within their position in the business, so that we're all on the same page, like having the value statement, having a vision, a mission, all of that stuff. And now that I'm out here, I do know, you know, more about other farms that are not, you know, I guess, operating in that way. But to me, there was really no, maybe it's my background in nonprofit and social, like, I can't not talk about values, like, first and foremost, right? Like, that's all there is at the end of the day. You know, it's not money that's driving us. It was saving the farm. A huge part of that was saving the farm. And my brother-in-law, the middle brother, you know, who he had come back here to take over on the farm operations. But it's too much for one person, you know. And with land prices, you know, increasing and housing expanding to, like, right out near us from the city, and land, you can't just buy more land, farm more land. Like, you have to diversify your business. So this became the way for us to be able to afford, you know, the rising cost of equipment, the rising costs of farming. You know, you need more income to be able to do that, or else that's why a lot of the small family farms are being sold now. So that's, yeah, that, it was twofold there, you know. We're going to be able to keep the farm, but we're going to do it our way too. So
there's got to be some great satisfaction in that. I mean, knowing that you are carrying on the generational farm, because you do have a child, and you could offer an option. It doesn't necessarily have to be their life's work. However, it's nice to be able to have something that lives beyond yourselves. I know one of the things when you were designing you and your husband were designing, accessibility was important. In fact, a wheelchair can get around easily in your store. And intentional design elements did you include because of accessibility, diversity, inclusion, all of those things?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a bigger question about diversity and inclusion in rural spaces in general. And it's something that I like constantly have thought about in previous jobs, you know, about what makes an accessible space or what, you know, makes an inclusive space. So this was kind of interesting because I didn't think of it so much as, you know, how to make an accessible farm store. It was just like using accessible design principles that can be used in any space, you know, and there's people out there, like advocates out there that are writing on this area and talking about how, like, going beyond code, you know, going beyond building code. And so I think because I follow, you know, those people on social media or, you know, read about this stuff anyways, wasn't a non-negotiable either. You know, I think about, you know, not just people in wheelchairs, but, you know, people with walkers or any kind of type of mobility issue, new parents with, or parents with strollers, you know, people coming in who just kind of need that extra support, you know, from a, I guess that's from more of a physical standpoint. But also, you know, out here, there can be spaces that are maybe not as welcoming to, there can be spaces that are not as welcoming. And so we try to just make the space as universally welcoming as possible to everybody, including through just how we greet people, signage in the store, you know, little things like that to indicate, you know, that everybody's welcome.
So why don't we talk about how we met? We both live in the same county, and I think we met during COVID. Do you want to explain the story about how we met?
Yeah, sure. So I moved out here to Ilderton area after we got back from Australia. So that was about 2021, end of 2020. We moved out here. And I know that it's only like 5 minutes out of the city, but I have to be honest, like, and it was a bit of culture shock for me. Coming from a background where, you know, the work that I do and the community that I have is a very diverse group of people. And we talk a lot about diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, within my social work sort of world. The conversations about those issues were very common. And then in the types of things I would, you know, do in my spare time, like the issues were just discussed as normal. And so when I moved out here, you know, not only was it COVID, I didn't have a sense of community out here because I didn't really know anybody. A lot of it was through my in-laws, which was nice to have that starting point. But it is very different living in a rural community, in an agricultural community, compared to being in the city, where, you know, I feel like it just the things you talk about are different, how you talk about them, and the interests people have. So there was in London, there was a very horrific hate crime that happened where a family was killed by a driver. They were a Muslim family. They were targeted and killed by a driver who was from a rural area around here. And that being from a family where I grew up in a Muslim household, you know, my family on one side is Muslim, you know, that just kind of was a little bit eye-opening for me. And I reached out to the mayor of our municipality and I said, you know, I don't know if there's anything happening in our community out here to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, but this thing happened, you know, even though it was in the city, it's only about 10 minutes from where we are. You know, I want to be a part of anything going on to really talk about these issues. You know, that's in my wheelhouse. And that was sort of how I was looking for community, being new to the area. And, you know, there wasn't necessarily anything formal happening, but luckily the mayor knew you, Shauna, as well, and, you know, a few other people too, and connected us because of that, you know, and there, you know, hasn't, we've tried to kind of, you know, work in that space in our own ways, I think, in the last few years, but just developed into a beautiful friendship.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think that I have obviously learned more from you than perhaps you have learned from me. But I do know how annoying I was at the beginning trying to be a white savior coming in and, you know, being ally, you know, but really not understanding a lot about what that meant, how to live that, but also, you know, to check in with folks about, you know, we don't want you to do that. Like, slow down. And, you know, you don't need to do this. Like, it is a really, really slow process of learning. And I think I feel very honored to have been able to have an education in that regard, but also learn, you know, I think part of it was I was like, let's do this and let's do that. And, you know, and there were several diverse women in our group. And some of you said, yeah, we're not doing that. We live it. So, you know, I'm exhausted. You go have fun or what, you know, like it. And I don't think I really understood until you and others were gracious enough to call me in, how much labor folks were carrying. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think we've all learned, I mean, even having just a place to be able to talk about, you know, diversity and inclusion in a rural context has helped me process, you know, a lot of the things that I felt when I moved out here, a lot of things I experienced, continue to experience, and also things that I don't experience, but that I try to be an ally for or just have empathy for. You know, I'm a cisgendered straight woman, you know, I'm half white. There's a lot of privilege that I have, you know, even though, yes, I'm a visible minority. On the other hand, I do have a lot of privilege. And so it's something that I think about, you know, when you live out here and you're not surrounded by lots of people where diversity is sort of when I grew up, diversity was just like a fact of life, you know, and navigating it was challenging. Yes, but you never questioned that it existed. Whereas out here, you know, that is something that I think about a lot, you know, with my son too. Like, I need to make sure that I'm intentionally teaching him about diversity, equity, and inclusion, because he doesn't actually grow up in as much of that as I did. You know, and so some of these things just look different out here. And it wasn't something that I, you know, was necessarily thinking about before I moved out here. But I think it, you know, it's its own sense of community, and it requires different strategies in a rural context to talk about diversity and inclusion. And it requires different types of work and reflection, and, you know, whether or not people, you know, whatever stage or place they're in that journey for themselves to do that work. It's always different, but even for me, like finding any sense of community, and that was through, you know, chats with you, chats with others who I did find, you know, through different avenues that had, again, it's back to those values, right? You know, I surely don't know everything, but constantly looking for ways to improve, to learn, to raise my own self-awareness, you know, is something I don't think that follows me wherever I go. It's not about whether I live urban, rural, whatever. You know, it's just work that I believe that I need to do for myself and for my community. So, yeah, I mean, that, and anybody can do that. And I think sometimes we get stuck thinking that all the work has to happen for other people, directly for them, and being an ally is doing actions for other people. But I think at the end of the day, there's always work we can do internally, and the responsibility to do that work is on each and every single person. So whether or not, you know anybody who from a certain group, or you know, it's still on you to educate yourself. We all need to educate ourselves constantly. And that's work that anybody can do at any time in their life. You can start at any time, and there's really no excuse, I think, to say, you know, well, we don't need to know about diversity because we don't have that many, you know, you don't know what diversity exists in your own community, visible, non-visible. So, you know, back to kind of, you were asking about the store and why it was so important to me to make it physically accessible, or even just like welcoming, you know, part of that is because, like, you don't know, like, I learned a lot through that. I was thinking physical mobility issues, you know, but as I was researching that, I learned a lot about visual impairments and how paint colors and fixtures within a bathroom, even, you know, the handrails in an accessible bathroom and the turning radius. And, you know, I educated myself, like, that's all you can really do, right? And then when the painters came out, I educated them, and it's just a trickle down effect, right? I said, I want this color on the walls, I want this color on the trim, because you need to have a contrasting color so people with visual impairments can see where the door frame is, things like that, right? You know, it's then they can tell the next person, and, you know, and then on and on, they can educate me on something. And yes, so I think a lot of the work that happens in rural spaces can be this kind of educate yourself mentality. It doesn't have to be wait until, you know, X number of visible minorities move to the community, or wait until, you know, it's an impact on economic development or whatever. Like, just do it. Just educate yourself.
You know, I love that. You were very intentional. We talked about your vendors. What about partners who have maybe surprised you in their positive aspects, and maybe some positive things that have happened as a result of some of the partnerships that you forged, you know, relating to food security, relating to the municipality, relating to students, in fact.
Yeah, that's been really interesting. Partnership building has ended up being something that just kind of happens, because I think once the word gets out, like, that you are a farm and you're open to talking to people, you know, then people come knocking, you know, to try to talk to you about whatever issues. So, I mean, we started with some of the more obvious resources in terms of, like, small business help, first through Fanshawe College. The Leap Junction was critical to making our business plan, absolutely critical. So we got a lot out of that, and we still talk to Fanshawe College, Leap Junction. The small business centers in London and the Community Futures out here, they each had different you know, in London, there's a foodpreneur program. So we got, you know, a lot of information about food specific stuff. The community futures out here, they are more rural context. So there's been some, useful links and grants and things through them. So I think like there's no one size fits all service. You kind of have to find the one that, or not even the one, but you just have to take bits and pieces. Like we casted a wide net. So we also worked with Tech Alliance on some of the sustainability pieces because that fit within their mandate, you know. Yeah. Now we've got another grant through Digital Main Street. Like it's very piecemeal. You can't do it all. You can't find every grant. You can't use every service. But this is when you know like what your business is about. Again, I keep harping on the values. It's so important because it makes it a lot easier to pick your partners and figure out who's going to give you the best, the best resources for what you're looking for. It can easily become a time sink if you try to just access all this stuff that's out there when it's not very clear like what you're looking for and what your needs are. And also I should say too, Pillar in London, the social enterprise incubator there, that was a whole other piece around the social values fit, you know? So we've done a lot to try to access things that I think, you know, fit with what we were trying to build.
I think you've also really put an emphasis on this is a career that young people can enter into, that this is a sustainable and desirable career for young people to pursue. And I think that's really admirable. You don't hear that a lot, that, you know, agriculture and farming and food can be fun and socially conscious and sustainable and all of those things. So what's your advice to young folks, young entrepreneurs, perhaps in a generational farm or not, or, you know, somebody wanting to leave the corporate rat race, maybe, took a little bit of a taste of that and it's not for them and they want to do something that is rewarding, sustainable. You know, what would your advice be?
I think, yeah, it you have to know who you are and what you stand for to start a business in this day and age that provides you with more than just a paycheck, you know, and if that's the driving force for you, like, that, you know that too. But if what you're looking for is to get personal satisfaction and have a positive impact, if impact is really part of what your why in terms of why you want to start a business, you need to be very clear about who you are, what your values are, what your mission is, like in your life as a person, because you will be working every day. And that's the reality. You as a business owner, and I this is something I wish, you know, that I had really heard like concretely from a business owner before we started this, not even a farmer, but just any business, is you are going to work every day, you know, even when you try to take a vacation, you're going to be on call. And really the only thing that I found in my experience that makes it worth it is knowing that I am solid in what it is I'm trying to achieve in my purpose. Because, you know, it's the cliche about love what you do, you won't work another day in your life. I mean, you will work. You will work. You will work hard. And yes, you'll be working for yourself. And there's tons of satisfaction in that. But if what you're looking for from your business is the social and a personal impact as well as a paycheck, then you need to make sure that it's something that you just truly, truly care about and that you're willing to work on every day, because you will. And that is something that I, you know, I was asked that in a job interview once, like what, how do you measure success in your career? You know, which was such an interesting question in a job interview. And it came down to impact. which is then how I kind of realized that my freelance career as a writer, you know, it gave me a paycheck. And I'm grateful for that because it was a great, you know, bridge to what I'm doing now in my life. But I didn't feel I was making an impact. I mean, I was writing content, meeting deadlines, etc. There wasn't that social impact piece. So it wasn't something I was ever going to do long term because I just didn't feel that, you know, that at the end of the day, like, yeah, that was worth working this whole week for, you know. So I would say to people, you know, be clear on your values. It will be the cornerstone of every business decision you make. It will help you find partners who are aligned in the same way and weed out a lot of things that could waste your time that don't have alignment. And it will help you feel that personal sense of satisfaction, even on the very difficult, challenging days.
I love that because I think a lot of business development or business plans or, you know, those are things that isn't going to be, that's not going to be in a SWOT analysis.
No.
Right? Like those things, it is about making it sustainable. It is about being able to make money. But at the end of the day, you also have to be able to sleep at night. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yes.
When you sleep.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of younger folks have an element in their life, especially if they're considering leaving the 9 to 5, because they want to have this impact. So it has to start from the beginning. And I will say, I have found, you know, the business coach that I work with, like, shout out to your initiative coach, Chelsea is the best.
we'll mention her in the show notes.
Yes. You know what? Finding a business coach who helped me through all this, because she herself had run a small business, she just asked the right questions that really started unlocking to me. Why am I here? Why do I want to be my own boss? Like, what's going to make me show up every day? And it doesn't have to do with, you know, the business idea. It has to do with you and who you are and your strengths and weaknesses. What do you want your life to look like? And then the business gets built after that, because you don't want to build a business that you don't want to work in.
It's very sage advice.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure that we could keep talking for hours, but I know that you actually have a business to run. So
yeah.
Thank you for spending some time with me today. And
thanks, Shauna.
I really appreciate it.
You know what would really help me and this podcast keep going? Leaving us a 4-star rating or even a review, I'd really appreciate that. To connect with other rural Canadian co-conspirators, subscribe to the Clearing a New Path newsletter or drop me an email. Clearing a New Path podcast artwork is supported by the graphic design of Katie Wilhelm, and the music branding is by the Hankering Studio. The podcast is produced by Radar Media in Thames Centre, Ontario. It is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, Haudenosaunee, Luni Lenape, and Adirondack peoples. The First Nations communities closest to the studio are Chippewa of the Thames First Nation, Oneida Nation of the Thames, Munsee Delaware First Nation, and the Chippewas of Kettle and Stony Point. We will speak to many people across Turtle Island, and as a settler, I'm committed to deepening my understanding of colonialism, dismantling other systems of oppression, my commitment to the TRC calls to action, and to reframing responsibilities to land and community. I am grateful to Mother Earth and to Spirit for the opportunity for love and connection, and to the spirits of the elders and the medicine people who I believe still walk the earth. Until next time,